Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
This is the Boomer and the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio. It is Monday, December 5th, 2011, and we are broadcasting from our studios in the Feeding Arizona complex in Youngtown, Arizona, also home of the Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. Just a reminder for those that haven't heard me say it in the past, I'll say it one more time. I can't say it enough. The Valley View Community Food Bank, under the guidance of Executive Director and Founder Jesse Ramirez, fed just short of 5,000 families for the Thanksgiving holiday. They had them lined up down the street and around the block to come and get the free food baskets, an entire Thanksgiving dinner. And then he served another between 200 and 300, I believe it was, dinners at a local church on Thanksgiving Day. So doing a lot of great work at the Valley View Community Food Bank. And we hope that you can help by donating whatever you can, be it money or foodstuffs, and contact them at valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. That's valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. And I am Peters, and this Pete Peters, and this is the Boomer and the Babe Show. And Deborah is not with us. She's working on these international women's projects that she's gotten herself involved in. So she's going to be busy all for the next couple of weeks leading up to Christmas, getting things wrapped up for their big kickoffs after the first of the year. So it's just me, and I have a lovely lady that's going to be our guest today. Her name is Cindy Laverty, and I hope I pronounced that right. Cindy Laverty is a caregiver. She's written the book Caregiving, Elder Care Made Clear and Simple, an excellent book for anybody that's in the position of having to care for their family, senior family, or other members that they may be involved in friendships and so on and so forth. Cindy discovered that empowering caregivers was her true professional calling several years ago when she was caring for her ill and aging former father-in-law. It wasn't easy. Thrown into caregiving unsuspectingly, Cindy learned to navigate the complex caregiver landscape that includes hospitals, doctors, bureaucracies, insurance, form prescription drugs, and a host of emotional challenges which accompany caregiving. And believe me, I've been there. I know exactly what she was facing. Cindy, welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show. We're glad to have you as a guest.
Oh, Pete, thanks so much. It's great to be here. It's my honor.
Oh, I'm truly honored. I've seen your book. You sent me a copy. It was nice of you to do so, and I was looking through it, and there is so much good information in there. It's absolutely amazing. I wished I had this book when I was dealing with the physical and mental demise of my father, obviously finally ending in his death. But geez, this would have been nice to have. I wish I'd have known about this book. Tell us a little bit about your journey before you became a caregiver and a professional caregiver. What is it that Cindy Laverty, and is that how I pronounce it, Laverty?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Tell us, Cindy, what you were doing prior to becoming Cindy Laverty, author, speaker, and caregiving professional.
Well, I worked in the fitness industry in marketing and advertising. That's what I did. I was a teacher a long time ago, and then I left and had my daughter, and then I got back into the business, corporate business world, and I was working at a high-end fitness club in Los Angeles in marketing and advertising and doing a lot of writing for them, you know, PR writing, that sort of thing. So my life changed dramatically one Sunday night in 2003 when he was my former father-in-law, but he was my ex-father-in-law. He was my ex-husband's father, and we had been divorced for almost 18 years.
My goodness.
It's a unique situation. And
yes.
I had a lovely relationship with him after the divorce. His wife was ill with, you know, physical disabilities, but also with dementia. So he and I had a nice relationship. He was a wonderful grandfather to my daughter, who he called the butterfly. And so for years and years and years, he and my daughter and my current husband and I would have dinner on Sunday nights. And we did this for about, I don't know, 5.5, 6 years maybe. And then she went off to college across the United States. And my husband and I continued to have dinner with him, not every Sunday, but a couple of times a month. And one night we were sitting at dinner, and he reached over and he took my hand and he asked me if I would pay his bills and check on his wife when he had open heart surgery at the age of 83. I didn't even know he had a heart problem. So, you know, I confirmed. I said, are we talking open heart surgery here? Are we talking, open heart surgery. And I asked him point blank, I said, Bob, why are you doing this? You're 83 years old. And he had the most amazing blue eyes, and he looked at me with these soulful blue eyes, and he said, because I want to see the butterfly graduate from college, and I can't do it if I don't have this operation.
Wow.
So there I was, having a glass of wine with tears streaming down my face, and I said yes, never knowing in that moment that my life was going to change forever. So that's really how it all came to be. And he had 14 hours of open heart surgery. They thought it was going to be 6. It went into 14, and he was recovering, and then he had a stroke. And, you know, I think his wife had caregivers, but they weren't really taking care of her. And, you know, I didn't know any of this because he would always meet us out on the front steps of the house when we would come to pick him up to go to dinner. So I didn't know any of this. And I soon realized that, and there was just one thing after the other, for her, for him, and it wasn't just paying his bills and checking on her. And I realized that I couldn't keep doing my job. I had to take care of him and her, and I had said yes, and I was going to do that. And I just think sometimes the universe works in interesting ways, and we get handed things that we never think is, you know, going to be handed to us, but there it is. So that's my story, Pete, in a nutshell.
Well, it's interesting you say the universe hands you things that you don't expect. It's very, very true. I mean, Deborah always says that you are one phone call away from your life changing forever.
That's right.
And
I was one dinner away.
There you go. Well, there you go. One glass of wine, and then it was... it's amazing that that's just the way of the world. You just never know. So at what point then did you you obviously were gaining all this experience, and I'm assuming maybe you were making some notes and writing things down and looking for guidance and some help. So what were you finding as you were?
Well, what I realized as I was going through this, I mean, I was on call for him 24/7, you know, 365 days a year. And between the back and forth with the hospital and his wife and the rehab when after his stroke and, you know, managing things there, I mean, what became very clear to me was that there is a lot of help, and there are a lot of doctors, and there are a lot of facilities for people who are elderly and going through recovery. But I needed help. And when today I guide caregivers through this journey, and I do it via the phone or on Skype or whatever. But what I realized was that, and I was falling apart. I mean, I completely abandoned my life. I completely abandoned my family. I had a daughter who was going through adjustment at college, and she needed help. There was no one to help me.
Right.
There was nobody to take my hand and walk me through this process, even to say, you're going to be okay. There were plenty of people who felt sorry for me, but I didn't need anyone to feel sorry for me. I needed someone to help me. And I went through severe caregiver burnout. I mean, I literally crashed and burned after about 4 months of doing this. And I learned in that process that what happens when you're a caregiver is this really isn't about the person who you're caring for. This is about you, how you, the caregiver, know how to take care of you, how
Correct.
You value your life, how you show up in the world every day. Do you know how to set boundaries? Do you know how to ask for help? I didn't know how to do any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to learn. I had to teach myself. I had to figure it out. And then I just decided, you know what? There are, as you say, how many millions of baby boomers? 75 million?
78 million.
Mm-hmm. 78 million. And there are 67 million family caregivers. So I knew someone else out there was struggling, and it wasn't just me.
So yeah, there was. That was not a figment of your imagination.
No.
It's amazing. Well, I just want to interject here because I know certainly to some degree what you're talking about, having been involved in my father's caregiving and now more and more almost weekly involved in my mother because her needs are getting greater.
Mm-hmm.
But the situation was Deborah and I were living in Southern California, and we came back one Christmas, and after – and knowing that my dad had dementia, Alzheimer's, and fully aware of it, and talking to him and my mother on a regular basis, I mean, a couple times a week from mm-hmm. California, just checking in. And we came here for Christmas, and this woman had aged basically before my very eyes.
Right.
And she, at that time, had been caring for him for about 6.5, maybe 7 years.
Uh-huh.
And we decided, Deborah and I decided that we have got to be there to help because, I mean, there's no one else to help.
Right.
So we made the move. We moved to Arizona. Well, one thing leads to another. Alzheimer's takes him on his journey, and he passes. And she is of the mindset that I am going to live my life again for the first time in 9 years. I'm not going to mm-hmm. be able to. Go to the store when I want to go do what I want to do, drive my car, go where I want to go shopping, whatever the case might be. And after about 2 or 3 months after his passing, she had a stroke, and all of a sudden she can't do it.
Right.
So
I'm not surprised.
I know. And I don't know if it's because of the loss after 63 years of marriage or if it's because of the wear and tear on her body.
It's both.
I mean, it is amazing. But, yeah, I'd like you to comment what you're finding on that.
Well, the story that you just described is what I find every day when I, you know, work with my family caregivers. And, you know, your mother, she forgot to take care of herself. And, like, you know, caregivers are like first responders, Pete. Whether it's your husband or a parents or grandparents or friend, caregivers are typically first responders. They run into the burning building without their gear, without an oxygen mask, without their axe to get anything out of the way. They run in to save the day while everyone else is running out the back door.
Right.
And so caregivers have this beautiful soul that says, I help. I give care. I do all of these things for someone, and it's okay if I sacrifice my life. And that's the problem, because you can only sacrifice your own life for so long, and then your health is going to go, your emotional well-being is going to go, your spiritual well-being starts to be broken down, and you're just stuck in this vicious cycle. So your mom obviously loved her husband of 63 years, which is, of course, I mean, he was her best friend, he was her soulmate, he was her partner, he was everything to her. But she forgot in that process to reach out and say, I need help.
Right.
I need to be able to go to the grocery store by myself, or I need to be able to go have tea with a friend. She forgot to ask for help. And I think when we get stuck in that place of not setting up a support system, not reaching out and saying, I need someone to help me, that's when we get into trouble. So we have all of these millions of people in America who are caring for a loved one and thinking that they're doing the right thing because they said yes, but abandoning their life in the process. So you have to find the balance.
Well, there does have to be a balance, and we've had other people on our show previously when we were doing the show on terrestrial radio, and there there's one thing about Sun City that you may or may not be familiar with. But Sun City is a 55-plus community. It's been around for 50 years now.
Yes, I do know that.
And at any rate, they have all kinds of activities and so on and so forth that retirees can partake of. And they also have, there have been businesses that have sprung up in Sun City, oh my goodness, all over the place. I mean, people will go do grocery shopping for you. They'll help you with, they'll be the caregivers. They'll be the professional caregivers and so on and so forth. And they'll come in and give you your respite care and so on and so forth. But the reality is, as many of them as there are here, and as busy as there are, as busy as they are, there is still more to do, which is absolutely amazing. And that's what the epidemic, this is an epidemic.
Oh, and yeah, it's an epidemic and it's a crisis.
Yes, it is. It's an epidemic of people that are suffering from the various dementias and the various diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a crisis of caregiving, because who is going to take care of the 78 million boomers?
Right. I'm hoping our children, but I don't think there are enough of them. But, you know, and that brings up a whole other subject, which is it's miraculous that we live in a world today, don't you think, where we can keep people alive, you know, into their 80s, 90s, 100s even.
Mm-hmm.
But what about, what happens to quality of life? I mean, I think we've forgotten about quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
And because the financial situation is what it is in this country right now, and so many, you know, elderly people had their, you know, their finances kind of wiped out, we now have not just a caregiving crisis, we have a financial crisis.
Absolutely. People are outliving their money.
Yes. People are outliving their money, and families don't know what to do, and people want to age in place. And so, you know, ideally for me, the perfect person is someone who's in their 40s or early 50s and says to mom and dad, okay, let's have the adult conversation. Let's talk about what money is available. Let's talk about what your wishes are. Let's talk about what your needs are. Let's talk about how we're going to do this. But we don't have this happening. I mean, you know, I get people coming to me when they're, you know, hanging out there on the limb and they're ready to fall off. Like,
right.
I can't do this anymore. I go, well, okay, so let's figure out how you can and what you need to do. So there are things you can do. Can I tell you that every day is going to be perfect if you follow the Cindy Laverty, you know, method for caregiving? No, but it'll be better. So let's just go back to your mom. I mean, your dad had Alzheimer's. She wanted to be there because part of her thought, I'm the only person who can do this for him the way he wants to have it done, right?
Right.
Uh-huh. And that's what I thought with Bob. I mean, I'm the only person who can do this because he doesn't want anybody else. But what I realized is that as long as someone is safe, as long as someone is clean, as long as someone is fed and cared for, it's okay to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to take a break.
Well,
as long as that person is okay, is safe.
Well, that's correct. Safety is safety, cleanliness, and nourishment are,
right.
are tantamount to just about anything else. There, but there's one thing also that I think has to be realized, and that is that these people, once they get to a particular point in a particular progression in their disease, are in another world.
They are no longer
of this world.
It's not the same person.
So that's not the same person, and you are not the same person to them.
No,
because they may not know who you are. I can remember countless times when my father would look at my mother and say, "Where's my wife?"
Right.
And my mother.
And that
would,
broke her heart.
Oh, absolutely. And she would take the picture that she had, their wedding picture, out of her wallet and say, right there. This is your wife. I'm your wife. And he would look at the picture, and he would look at her, and he would look at the picture, and he would look at her, and he'd go, oh.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only acknowledgement that there was. So he still didn't know. He still didn't fully understand, and maybe didn't believe. You know, he had suspended his belief. But
right.
The fact is, as long as the caregiver is doing what you say and just alluded to, and you just said as far as cleanliness, safety, and nourishment, as long as they're providing that. That really is, and kindness, other than that, it has to suffice.
Yes, because it does.
Because they don't understand. The give and take isn't there anymore.
Right, and I think the caregivers are always, you know, like hoping that if I'm here, there's going to be that connection. And I think this is where the medical community fails families. Because there needs to be, I mean, Alzheimer's Association does this, but people have to reach out and ask for help. I mean, there needs to be that moment when you really get that this is not the same person. This disease has ravaged my husband, my wife, you know, my mother, my father. It's horrible, but... You know, and in the beginning, you do need to be there to sort of help stimulate the brain and be there with them, and you want to be there. But when that moment comes, whatever stage of Alzheimer's it is or stage of dementia when they don't know, that's the time when you have to start preparing yourself to let go.
Well,
and
you
can do that by stepping back.
That's very true.
And I think we need to get, you know, what is this with families not getting involved in taking care of their loved ones? You know, I am always horrified when I hear, well, I'm the only person who does it. My brother doesn't do it. My sister doesn't do it. Nobody helps. I don't even ask anymore. It's like, I don't buy that. There has to be a way that in America, families are going to start doing what other cultures do, which is to come together as a family unit and make this work.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. I had a guest on the show a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think of what her name is. Carolyn Brentwood or Brent or something like that. She's written a book about that very subject.
Mm-hmm.
About the fact is, where was everybody else? Where were you? Type of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, she gets a lot into caregiving and what you have to do and so on and so forth. But the gist of the story is she was the one taking care of Dad. And
mm-hmm.
she was the one that gave up her career and to some degree her wealth. I mean, not
mm-hmm.
that she was terribly wealthy, but I mean, whatever she had saved. And all of a sudden, then the family members came on board, and they decided that they were going to help, and they wanted to make sure that they got some of the money from the estate.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only reason they went. That's the only reason they claimed on board.
Right. Well, I mean, my big announcement to everybody is, you know what? Your parents' wealth does not belong to you.
That's right.
It does not belong to you. If there's some left over, great. It doesn't belong to you.
Yeah, I mean, whatever the house is, whatever the stocks and bonds and the savings accounts and checking accounts, whatever it is, for instance, with my mother has, that is all there for her and for her care if she needs
right.
it.
Right.
And once it's gone or once it's depleted or diminished, whatever's left, fine. And my sister and I can split it. But other than that, no.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, if you decide you're not going to do a reverse mortgage on a house, or you're not going to, you know, sell any stocks, or you're not going to sell a life insurance policy because everybody wants the money, then I got to tell you, money is worth nothing if you have depleted your whole human resources and life and body and health and wellness for money. What good's
mm-hmm.
that going to do you?
Very true.
So it becomes a matter of what does our life mean to us? What does your life mean to you? Do you really believe that you matter? Do you really believe that it's okay to reach out to someone? Because, you know, I can tell you, when people actually reach out and ask somebody to support them and help them in a specific way, they get more help than they ever even knew they could have.
Right, right. It's tough for some folks, especially I think folks the age of my parents,
mm-hmm.
that they have all been self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm. They're a very private generation.
Very private generation. My father, when he was alive, God love him, we'd never even know how he voted.
My father was pretty vocal about that.
Oh, this man, there was, I mean, that was his business. He kept his own counsel.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't say nothing to nobody about it, period, because it was none of their damn business.
Right, right. I mean, well, I remember so well, my dad passed away a year ago, and I remember talking to him about, you know, going on hospice and coming home. And I mean, I got to tell you, Pete, I mean, I don't have anxiety attacks in my life. I had anxiety attacks over this. Like, I would be driving in the car and I couldn't breathe. I thought, oh my gosh. But then I realized, okay, this is a lesson for me. I have to learn how to do this, because I can tell other people what to do. But when it came down to my dad, that was totally different. I mean, we actually had a really beautiful conversation around it, but, and he did come home on hospice, and I think he had a really good month before he passed away, but it's scary.
Yeah.
But you have to move through the scary, because otherwise you've just got a bigger mess on your hand. It becomes like a mushroom cloud, you know?
That's very true. That's very true. I mean, it was, and you have to, You would hope, and this is what we were very fortunate at towards the end of my father's life. He left the house because he was ill. He had had a wound that had become infected, and it got worse, and he went into the hospital, and then he came from the hospital because he was having other issues. Then he went to skilled nursing to the hospital. And it turns out that he was on a blood thinner, and he started ripping bandages off, and I mean, just not a pleasant sight or an existence. And then the final days, the last time he went to the hospital, they called me from the care facility and said, "You better come over here because your dad won't listen to us. He keeps thrashing."
Mm-hmm.
So I went and I got him settled down, and we got him cleaned up, and we took him to the hospital because they were afraid that he'd lost some significant amount of blood, which he had.
Right, right.
So now he's in the hospital. He's in the hospital laying there, and they're giving him some of the best care. I mean, we could go, I could just issue all kinds of papers and diatribe on.
Right, right.
On
I know.
On hospital care, it's just unbelievable. But at any rate, he finally was maintained and got stable. But there's nothing they could do. I mean, there was just nothing. And finally, we had a doctor. Of all these 9 months of back and forth, 90 days. I'm sorry, not 9 months. 90 days of back and forth, and we finally found a doctor that said, "You should probably consider hospice because we can't do anything more for him." And we finally had a doctor that leveled with us.
Yeah.
And so we took him to hospital, and 9 days later he was gone peacefully. And it was just the agony of watching what was happening, the stories I could tell. And it was gut-wrenching to see what was going down.
And you think when he's thrashing around, pulling things off him, that he's telling you in whatever way he can, "I don't want to do this anymore"?
Exactly.
I mean, in retrospect, he's saying, I don't want to do this anymore.
That's
but,
right.
Of course, you know, people say to me all the time, "Why do these doctors keep people alive so long?" Well, that's their job.
Yes, it is.
That a doctor must do that. And so if I can say anything to your listeners right now, it's make sure that you have a medical health directive in place for you, for your spouse, for your parents. If you don't have that, you've got nothing.
Right.
And that is the one document that if you've just got to have it. And there's a new document, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, it's called Five Wishes. And it's, you can get it on the, it's downloadable on the internet. It's a more extensive medical directive, but it literally goes into, and it's valid, I think it's in like 44 states. So, but even still, you should download it, because what it does is it goes into when I am whatever way it is, this is what I want. This is what I want. I want my family to do this. I want this music played at my bedside. You get to really say what you want. And it's a beautiful document because although it's a legal thing, it opens up the conversation that people don't want to have.
Well,
so
I,
five wishes.
I've written that down. Well, we're redoing our website, but that's something we should put on it. It's interesting because we have, for instance, we have the power of attorney that's there, medical power of attorney, with the instructions on how and when things are to be done and what is not to be done. More importantly, what is not to be done. And we do, my mother does have her DNR. She moves it from time to time, and we can't always find it, but that's another issue.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to also know that when you do the medical directive, you're going to have certain things in place. That can be changed at any time. I mean,
yes.
You can always be changing your medical directive. It's not something that is, you know, written in stone and there for eternity. So you can change it.
Absolutely, you can change it. It's yours to do with as you wish. It is your wish. But at any rate, it's nice to know. And when the end did come from my father, it was what was to be done with him, with his body was already predetermined. The call was made. It was taken care of, and we did a little graveside, and that was it. Everything was handled. Everything was prepaid.
Right.
And if I could say anything to anybody, that regardless of how old you, I don't care how old you are, if you have that done, it makes the survivor's life that much easier.
Oh, absolutely!
You don't have, it's just incredible. The sole question that we met when we met with the mortuary, the sole question was, what kind of service do you want? Do you want a service, and how many death certificate copies do you need?
Yeah, and that's you do
all.
Need death certificate copies, by the way.
You do. Yes, you do.
You need at least 10 of them.
Well, we got them, and that's good. But I mean, but the point is that was the extent of our decisions. That was the extent of. I mean, everything else was taken care of.
No, and it's a huge relief, because this is what makes the caregivers crazy, is that nothing has been done, nothing has been planned, no conversation has ever happened around, you know, before the need for care, during the need for care, or what, you know, when God says, come on over and hang out with me for a while,
right,
you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, it's very really ironic to me, because we are a society of planners. I mean, my gosh, women are planning where their children are going to go to preschool before the baby's even born. We plan what neighborhoods we're going to live in based on schools. We start saving for children's college funds when they're, you know, an infant. We don't plan for getting old.
No, we don't.
I mean, we save money, you know, through 401k or pensions or whatever that is, but, you know, some people don't save money. But we don't plan for getting old. What does that look like to you? Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of a magical exercise, you know. Do you really want to retire at 65? You don't have to. Who says
exactly.
You have to?
That's right. There's no predetermined age that the switch goes and you say, okay, now I have to retire here. The light goes off for as far as business and work.
Yeah, we're just so conditioned to buy into these, you know, these ideas that have been told to us over the years. I speak in LA and I do to elderly people, and I do the empowered senior talk, and it's really fun because, you know, we talk about what if you started working again, what would you do or where would you go? I don't know why we think we have to like hang it up at 62 or 65 and go, that's the end of me. Because that is the end of you.
Because you know why? Because that's when it was deemed that Social Security would take effect. That
right.
You could get your Social Security then.
Oh, so great. And that's a good way to live.
Well, let me tell you, I'm taking my Social Security right now, and guess what? It ain't enough.
You can still take your Social Security and do other things.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Social Security should not be, you know, an edict that says, okay, you're done in society, society's done with you, here's your monthly pittance, and good luck.
Exactly. I'm looking at your book here, and I'm just, as I'm looking through the table of contents, I like the way it's laid out because you're not giving people, you have a lot of categories, first of all. I mean, there you got.
But it's part, short. Tell people part, it's
yeah,
short.
That's right. It is. Well, it is. That was going to be my next comment. You have under the forms and resources, you have, I don't know how many it is, but I'm looking at from page 105 to 106. To the end of the book, I guess, almost. And I look back there, and there are forms that people can fill out. Family pet information, veterinarian information, anything you can imagine is back in there, which this is phenomenal.
Well, this book came about as a result of my experience. So when I was taking care of Bob, one of the things that I was just sort of overwhelmed with was the amount of paperwork. And we did have caregivers for him. So every time a new caregiver would come into the home, I'd have to go through the same thing. This is what he'll eat. This is what he won't eat. This is his story. This is his history. He was a World War II vet. He flew B-24s, blah, 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 on and on. And I thought, why don't I just create some forms here that people can look through in a notebook? So the forms are in the book, and in the back of the book is a CD with all of the forms on them so you can download them as you need them. Mm-hmm. And then interestingly enough, people would say to me, I would ask them, how do the forms work for you? Well, I never downloaded them. Why not? I didn't have time. So I went ahead and I actually created the entire binder, which is available on my website. So you've got the binder, you've got the forms, you've got the tabs, you've got plastic sheets to keep prescriptions, you've got plastic sheets to keep doctor's business cards and whatever you need. So that's there on my website, which is empoweredcare.com.
Great.
So
go ahead.
I just think being organized is really important because, well, you know, Pete, I mean, helping take care of your dad, there's just papers everywhere and they just come en masse, especially if somebody's been in the hospital or a rehab facility. It's like every day, more papers, more papers, more papers, more papers.
Well,
you got to keep them somewhere.
Yes, and keep this in mind also, anybody that's listening, please. It's not only the incoming paperwork from the
right.
hospitals. It's the existing paperwork that's in the house that needs to be sorted out.
Right.
I mean,
right.
There's one thing, and I'm almost embarrassed to say this.
Oh,
my mother has been cleaning out the paperwork for the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I know. I know that it'll never be the same place because she will clean the same. I will go through it with her. I will organize it. We'll put it in ring binders, and then she will take them apart to sort through them.
Uh-huh.
And it'll be reshuffled. But you know what? You know what? That's really okay because here's what happens. She has a sense of accomplishment that she gets frustrated because she doesn't get it all done the way she wants. She forgets.
Mm-hmm.
But she has a sense of accomplishment in that she is doing something and that she is in control.
Right.
And she also has a feeling of being important. And
yes.
and making decisions. And
that's such a huge point you just made, that she has a sense of feeling important and making decisions. We just take that away from people. You can't walk as well or have the same balance doesn't mean you can't make decisions and feel important.
Well, let me tell you how I learned it. I learned it the hard way, and my sister and I learned it together when she was here visiting a year ago or so. And Mother was going through all the paperwork and doing this and doing that, and I'm sitting there going, she doesn't need this, she doesn't need that. My sister was going, Mom, we got to throw this away. Mom, we got to throw this away. And she just got irate. You are taking over my life, and I want to be able to do it myself. Okay. I walked out of the room. I said, it's yours. You got it. Now, it's amazing that in our haste of wanting to get it done, wanting to make it happen, wanting to make it clean, wanting to make it easy for her and so on and so forth, we forgot to realize that it was her stuff.
Right.
It was her life that we were meddling with.
Right.
Regardless of what she was doing with it, whether it was right, wrong, or indifferent, it was still hers to do with as she saw fit. Mm-hmm. And was she really going to ruin anything? Was she going to close bank accounts? Was she going to take money and abscond with it and disappear and give it to some charity? No, she was going to put it. She was going to put $20 and $40 and $100 underneath pillows, behind pictures, and whatever else.
Right.
But that's the extent of it. And we were going to be able to have a treasure hunt looking for it again, because we do it all the time.
Right.
But that's just the way it is. And
but you could fix that. You could let her organize her papers all you want. Just make sure you have the most important ones copied and in a file in your house.
That's done.
There you go. So then she can organize whatever she wants, as many times as she wants.
Shuffle them off to Buffalo if you want.
Right. Move them around, put them in new folders. It's all good.
It is good. Yeah, so when she can't find her checkbook, that's okay because I've got the rest of them.
There you go. I love, though, that you get this. You get it.
Well, we do get it. And Deborah's been wonderful through this. It's my parents, and she's been wonderful through it. And she had the same issues with her mother before she passed. And she was doing it long distance. She was doing it from here to Arkansas. Mm. That's the other thing that I don't understand, Cindy. And maybe you can shed some light on this, because I don't know where it comes from. Why it is that families and siblings cannot work together towards the common goal of making it as pleasant as possible for these people? Why does there have to be such a hassle?
Well, I'm not a therapist.
I know you're not.
Do work with families a lot.
And you stayed in a Holiday Express hotel last night, so.
What I find is that because when we don't look at the bigger picture, at what the end result is going to be, what I say to people all the time is, you know, this is your final walk with your loved one. Mm-hmm. What do you want this to look like? How do you want this to be remembered? How do you want to show up here? Families bring all of their stuff, all of their garbage, all of their past history into this, even in their 50s and 60s and 70s.
Yes.
And really, it's not about you anymore. It is about you. It's about how you grow. Caregiving, to me, was the single biggest thing, next to giving birth to my daughter and raising her, that altered the way I view life. And I wasn't even caring for my own parents. But I learned things about myself that were so important. And I realized that if we can live a life, our lives, daily lives, rooted in care and coming from a heart-centered, loving place, then none of that stuff from the past matters. It doesn't matter if Dad showed up at your soccer game more than he did to Joe's soccer game.
Right.
It doesn't matter that somewhere in your 20s there was a big family fight. What matters is how you do that final walk. Because when your loved one is gone, there are no do-overs.
That's right.
There are no do-overs. And so they physically leave. I happen to believe that the soul lives on. That's just me personally. But you're left with how you dealt with that. So I think it's just because people get so stuck in their stuff and they're so comfortable in their stuff, and we all have, you know, little gremlins in our head saying, you can't help your sister because remember when she did this to you? And if you do that, then you're giving away your power and she's going to feel more powerful. It's just things in our head from our past that have no basis that's truthful.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And so it's about dealing with your own stuff.
You know what's interesting is I have a friend that is in a similar situation, and his surviving parent just passed away not long ago, within the last 90 days. And he and his sibling were at odds with how things should be handled.
Mm-hmm.
And it was apparently a bit of a problem. He was the one that was physically closer, not necessarily mentally closer, but physically closer. So therefore, he was the one that was more involved in the day-to-day activities. And the brother was back in another, back east. And the brother had a wife, and the wife had a parent that was going through the same type of situation as his mother was over in California.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always saying, this is what you need to do with mother, this is what you need to do with mother, this is what you need to do with mother. Until all of a sudden he had occasion to be involved with his mother-in-law on a more hands-on effort. And all of a sudden the tune changed.
He got it
because he said, now I know, and I have to apologize. Now I know what it was that you have been putting up with and what you have been dealing with. And
right.
Putting up, and as you know, it sounds bad when I say putting up, but putting up with is some of what goes on.
Absolutely. And there's nothing more wonderful than a fly-by sibling. That's what I call them.
A fly-by.
A fly-by sibling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Stink your head in, snoot around a little bit just to make sure that everything's going more or less okay.
Yeah.
Complain and bellyache a little bit and then get out of town.
Right. So if you're going to be a fly-by sibling, the only thing I was going to say is that, you know, make sure that you say, hey, thanks, you're doing a really great job, and then keep your mouth shut about the rest of it.
Keep your mouth shut. Get the heck out of Dodge.
Yeah. How can I help you? I can't be here physically. How can I help you financially? What can I do for you? Can I give you a gift certificate to go to a spa while I find someone to come in and take care of Mom? That's
right.
What you do if you're an out-of-town sibling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting you should say that. My sister is coming in for the Christmas holidays with her husband and daughter. And she said that she called and asked, do you and Deborah want to get away for a little while while we're there? Do you want to just go somewhere so you can get out of that house?
That's nice. Does your mom live with you?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. My mom lives with me, too.
Yeah, we moved into the house where my parents lived in Sun City, and that was at my mother's idea, and then we added on out back, so they got she has about a 900 to 1,000 square foot quarters in the back that was going to be
nice.
That was for her and my father, and he lived there for about 90 days. Everything seemed to happen in 90-day increments from when he left. He lived there for 90 days. He left. He lived for 90 days, and then and he was in hospice for 9 days. So it was out a bunch of nines. But I thought
bunch
maybe
of nines.
I should just go bet nines somewhere.
Maybe. Yeah, doesn't it bring you comfort though to know that she's so close? I mean, I'm sure there's times when it's hard. I mean, there are times when it's my mom's in great health. She means she lives with us and has for years, but it just gives me comfort to know that she's like right here. She's just right here.
Yeah,
I know she's entertained. I know she's fed well. I know she's taken, you know, she gets stimulation from the family, and my daughter's over a lot, and it just makes me feel good.
Well, I feel good about it myself. I mean, the fact that she's back there, and I know, and I at this point, it's getting to the point. It's not there yet, but it's quite there yet. But it's getting to the point. I really need to know what she's doing. I mean, she's her stroke caused her some field of vision loss and things like that. So I need to know that she doesn't walk as strongly and briskly, so she uses a walker. But I mean, so in that respect, it's good to know that what's going on.
Right.
If I hear a crash, it doesn't take me long to get back there.
Exactly.
You know, that type of thing. But I do like the fact that she's there in many respects because, for instance, when the her great granddaughters were there this weekend, it was a stitch. I tell you.
A little bit of magic, huh?
Oh, man, it was a stitch. I mean, she just shakes her head at these kids, and the kids go running back to Grandma Vivian's and talk and yak. And Grandma Vivian, you're particularly good looking today.
Well, you know, I think we're at a point in our society where we are going to have to start embracing more multi-generational living.
Oh, absolutely.
For financial reasons, for emotional reasons, for the simple fact that, you know, the assisted living facilities and the skilled nursing facilities are all getting full and nobody can afford them anymore.
Right.
So we're going to have to start embracing that notion. And it's a foreign concept to Americans. It is not a foreign concept anywhere else in the world.
You know, speaking of amazing, Deborah was just telling me, and I don't know where she read this, about the Eskimo tradition. I don't know where she heard this, and I don't know that they practice it any longer, but it used to be the case where the elderly, when they were infirm, they would put the Eskimo elder on an ice floe and let the ice floe take them out to sea.
Ooh, wow.
Isn't
that's
that
pretty cool.
I guess, but I think they were alive when they put them on there.
Oh, they were?
Yeah, that's chilling.
Oh, ew. Oh, ew. I hope they don't do that anymore.
I don't know what they do.
I don't like that. You got to let me know the end of that story, Pete.
But the fact that they would put them on an ice floe and let them go out to the ocean, that would be fine. But, geez, I hope they weren't breathing.
I hope not either.
Maybe they gave them a couple of fish.
Maybe a couple of Valium or something. I don't know. I don't know. But I do think that we're going to have to start looking at this whole situation differently.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And I want to plug this book of yours again. We're getting down here towards more or less the end of an hour. But I just want to let everybody know that they need to get this book. If they're involved at all in caregiving, if they anticipate that they're going to be involved in caregiving, if it even looks like you have a chance of being involved in caregiving, you need to get this book, Caregiving, Elder Care, Made Clear and Simple by Cindy Laverty. Now, how can they get the book, Cindy?
It's available on Amazon. That's the best place to get it. I'm actually redoing my website right now. It'll soon be available on my site, but right now it's not. But I would also like to tell people that if you go to my site, which is empoweredcare.com, I send out a twice monthly newsletter. There's a free gift there for you if you want to get that. It's called You, the Other Person to Care For. And, you know, I just think it's important for people to understand that, you don't have to walk this journey by yourself. You know, you need somebody who you trust. You need somebody who's in your corner. You need somebody who can be there for you when you need it. You don't have to do it by yourself. You shouldn't do it by yourself. And there's no, you don't lose anything by extending your hand and saying, hey, will you help me out here? It's okay. I mean, it's tough. Caregiving's tough. It's tough stuff. But there are ways to get through it where it doesn't destroy your life.
Well, and if you're not careful, it will destroy your life.
It will.
I mean, it absolutely will. It's like, how can you liken it to anything else? But you hear the stories of psychiatrists and psychologists that after listening to people's problems for day after day after day, year after year after year, they end up going around the bend themselves.
Right.
And that's kind of what you're looking at as a caregiver, because first of all, you're not trained as a professional in that field.
Yeah, you didn't get your PhD in caregiving.
That's right. And so therefore, in many cases, anything that you come up with is not tried and true. I mean, it's something you're doing the best you can. I mean, it's sort of like raising children. It really
right.
is.
I mean, but look at all the people out there you can go to for help with raising children.
That's right. That's right. And that was exactly my point. You do the best you can with what you've got, and you may as well take advantage of the stuff that's out there, because Lord knows you're going to need help. It's bigger than you. It's bigger than you are.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't go. I mean, it's when you're raising your children. You said something earlier about something that some of the happiest times are the way you bring them up, and also.
Mm-hmm.
You nurture them through and whatever else, and then you're also judged by the way you send them out.
Right.
And it's the beginning and the end, and that is your legacy. If nothing else, that is your legacy. If you have mm-hmm. children and you have parents that you deal with, that is your legacy.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And, you know, the other thing is, so often people say to me, you know, caregiving is just like raising, you know, children. And I go, no, it's not. No, it's not. Because children are growing, learning, moving
right.
forward. A lot of times seniors are unlearning and they're not going to relearn.
That's right.
And it's different. You know, someone's at the beginning of their life, another person's at the end of their life, and so there's different challenges that are involved. I mean, there are huge emotional challenges in taking care of a parent who is becoming dysfunctional rather than functional.
Yes.
I mean, it's their uncomfortable moments, and that is why you can't go through this alone. But the other thing is that when we're raising our children, we know when to say yes, we know when to say no, and we know it's okay to say no, we know it's okay to set boundaries. The same is true with caring for a parent or caring for a spouse. It's okay to say no to your mother.
Yes,
it's okay to say no to your father. As long as you do it with clarity and love and conviction, and, you know, no, I can't do that right now. I mean,
exactly.
You know.
Well, there are times when I said no to my father. When he asked,
you have to.
When he asked for particular implements of self-destruction, I said no.
I can't do that.
So no, we won't do that, Dad. I said we've never done that all the years that I've known you. We're not going to start now. You know,
right?
It's just
well,
not
Bob
happen.
Once called me and asked me if I would bring his checkbook over, and I said, "What? All your bills are paid. What do you need the checkbook for?" He says, "Well." His caregiver was getting a divorce, and he wanted to give her $50,000 so she could get a good attorney. Now, I laugh about that, but these are the kinds of things that happen.
Yes.
The caregiver was gone in an hour, and he didn't give her $50,000.
I was going to say, what came first? Picking the caregiver up?
The firing came first.
Yeah,
but these are the kinds of things that happen, and why would you even know to think about this?
Exactly. some, you know, it's never mind. That was an off-color joke. I'm not going to say.
Oh, okay. We won't do that on this show,
no,
Pete.
No, exactly. But at any rate, Cindy, I want to thank you for spending this hour with me. It's been very informative and very thought-provoking for a lot of people, I'm sure. And I can just hope that people start listening to this show on the archives if they haven't heard it live. And I think this book is wonderful. Like I said at the onset,
I wish I'd have had it,
but I'm glad I have it now. So it's a wonderful piece of work that you did. How long did it take you to write it, by the way?
It didn't take me that long. Just a few months, really.
That's good.
I just, you know, if you when you read it, now that you've talked to me, you'll know it's like I sort of wrote it like I talk. So.
Yep. Well, it's very simple. It's very plain. It's very, mm-hmm. very plain English. It's just plain English. Do this, do that. Use this, use that. You know.
Yeah, there are thousands of books out there on caregiving. The last thing I wanted to do at the end of the day was to read a big, huge, voluminous book on all the things I hadn't done right. So I thought, all right, just do a roadmap.
Well, that's, you know, and it's interesting. This caregiving is not easy.
No.
It's, in some cases, the actions that have to be taken are very simple.
Yes.
And also, you have to know what they are. For instance, in the living room, remove the throw rugs. Unstable table should be removed. Footstools can lead to falls. That type of stuff. That is just there. And people need to realize it, because the next thing you know it, you're going to walk in and your elderly parent or whoever you're caring for is going to be laying on the floor and, please help me, I've fallen and I can't get up.
Right.
People make light of that commercial,
mm-hmm.
but it's a very serious commercial.
It happens all the time, and if somebody falls and ends up in the hospital with a broken hip, your life just changed dramatically, as did theirs.
As did theirs, and theirs.
Get
good.
Rid of the throw rugs. For
yes,
some reason, seniors are married to their throw rugs. I don't care whether they came from Target or Kmart or some foreign country. They're married to their throw rugs, but you got to get rid of them. They're just a hazard waiting to happen.
I'm going to leave. I want to make this one last thought, one point before we close. When my mother had her stroke and she had lost field of vision, she didn't lose her sight, but she lost field of vision, all peripheral vision on the left side.
Uh-huh.
And she was going to be, she was still going to be able to walk around and so on, but it's going to be a little bit more difficult. She's going to be a little unstable. Her neurologist said to us, "Do you have a pet in the house?" The answer was yes. He said, "Pick up the pet's toys."
Mm-hmm.
People will mm-hmm. stumble on the pet's toys, even though they've been there forever, and the pet just
yep.
throws them around and plays with them. Pick up the pet's toys, because they will go unseen even by a completely sighted person.
Right, right.
So,
that's a great tip.
So
I'm going to have to add that.
No, you got to print a whole new book. You got an
agenda. I'll just put a little P.S.
P.S. Pick up the pet's toys.
Pick up the pet's toys.
There you go. Well, Cindy, it's been a real pleasure meeting you and a lot of fun talking to you about a very serious topic, but nonetheless, I've enjoyed the conversation, and I hope our listeners have enjoyed it as well. And best of luck in your future endeavors.
Thank you, Pete, and to you too. It's been a real pleasure, and I wish you a really wonderful holiday with your family.
Thank you.
All
and
right.
To you. Before we leave, give us your website information one more time.
It's empoweredcare.com. empoweredcare.com.
Cindy, thank you very much. Have a great holiday.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Take care now. And we've been joined today by Cindy Laverty, the author of Caregiving, Elder Care Made Clear and Simple, and the clear and simple part of it is the most important part, because believe me when I say the things in this book are plain right out of common sense, and it's a good thing to have as you're going through this journey of giving care to loved ones, elders, whatever it may be, friends, neighbors, however you're involved in it. This book is a godsend and a real great guide. So Caregiving, Elder Care Made Clear and Simple by Cindy Laverty. You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio, where we bring good conversation to the world. Today, we brought you information and conversation with Cindy Laverty. You can listen to the Boomer the Babe Show every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, we do much more than host this radio show. Check us out at boomerandthebabe.com. See everything that makes up the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. Another great show again tomorrow. Tomorrow's guest is going to be, we're going to be talking about taxes tomorrow. The Taxinista will be with us tomorrow. The Taxinista talking about taxes, business, and personal. Have a great day, everybody. Join us tomorrow for a great show on taxes. Take care. Boomer and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerandthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.